Medical Matters.
So just before I speak to Dr. Mike Marshall, David in Orange Grove says, you're probably not going to read this on air. Okay, I'm going to read it. In life, it's quite a simple equation. You get what you pay for and you get what you vote for. Cheers. And then he says, you're probably not going to read this on air. July is dedicated to men's mental health issues, folks. So, Dave, please listen. Listen, we really need to have this conversation. Dr. Mike Marshall is my guest, Executive Manager for Research and Product Development at Afrocentric. Dr. Mike Marshall, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate it.
Good evening, Aubrey, and good evening to your listeners. Just confirm you can hear me.
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. In one of the conversations you've had recently, you say that South Africa probably has some of the most stressed people in the world. Yeah, I mean, judging from Dave's message a few moments ago, I can see that. What do you attribute this to?
Well, Aubrey, I think, you know, there was a report done not that long ago looking at the mental state. It was a world report of South Africa, and as you correctly say, I mean, we sort of featured very poorly. In fact, you know, we were sort of bottom of the list in terms of mental well-being. And I think a lot of that, you know, has got to do with, you know, some of the circumstances we find ourselves in. So if you look at that report, there was a correlation between education and unemployment. And of course, those are two big issues in our country. But I think, you know, if you also look at some of the other issues that we have, political unrest, I guess crime, violence, yeah, people losing jobs. I mean, there's just so much there that I think it really makes it hard for us.
I can't disagree with that, and there's no way that anybody can argue with the realities and the effects that they obviously have on our mental health. But I'm more interested in getting to understand why South Africans would be considered to be the most stressed in the world. I mean, that's quite a declaration.
Yeah, I suppose difficult to say, but I think our own stats, for example, in our medical scheme are just showing, you know, a real, you know, sort of increasing rate of mental health. I mean, we were worried about mental health in 2019 before COVID, and we've now sort of surpassed the 2019 levels. So, yeah, I think all those things, Aubrey, that I've mentioned,
yeah,
possibly bit worse than elsewhere. Very difficult to say why are we worse than other countries, but that's what it seems like.
No, it definitely feels like it. It definitely feels like it. But the big issue, of course, is how we as men tend to have an aversion to seeking help, particularly as it pertains to our mental health. Why is this? Why do we seem to have a specific and a particular aversion to seeking help as far as mental health is concerned, which is why the month of July has been dedicated to that particular campaign? Why do we have this issue?
Yeah, I mean, Aubrey, just again, some stats. If you look at, you know, the outcomes of mental health and suicide, it would appear that, you know, men are 2 to 3 times more likely to commit suicide than women, which is really, really concerning. And then when we look at our own stats and we look at the sort of people that seek help for mental health, it's mostly women that do that, men far less so. So it would appear that we've got the sort of gap where men are you know, sadly committing suicide, but also not seeking mental health. And another, you know, the question of why, I mean, it's one, I guess, has to be careful not to stereotype,
yeah,
men and women, and I don't want to step into that trap. But I mean, perhaps, you know, I mean, I guess there would be a lot of opinions for this, but I mean, I guess, you know, if you look at our society, you know, traditionally, I guess women very much sort of matriarchal, looking after the family, a lot of people dependent on them. You could argue that, you know, they would feel sort of, you know, they need to get help earlier. And again, we see that in our stats. Whereas men, it's sort of almost, you know, the sort of patriarchal type of approach, the sort of, you know, cowboys don't cry type of sort of approach. You know, the stigma attached to mental health, you know, just don't seek help. And we see these stats and very concerning.
Yeah, yeah. I had a conversation, I think, as early as last week with another a professional in the mental health field who also gave me a couple of stats suggesting that the attempts at suicide by women are more than those of men, but men seem to be a lot more, you know, a lot more successful in their few attempts. Fewer attempts by men, but men seem to be a lot more successful at their suicide attempts, whereas women will have a lot more attempts, but less so. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts about that. And then I received a very, very interesting call from somebody who was listening quite attentively to our conversation, who asked the question, if women are more likely to seek out medical help or mental health assistance, but we see them attempting to kill themselves a lot more than men, isn't this whole conversation perhaps headed in a totally wrong direction, in that it's not necessarily the seeking out of help that helps people? Something else seems to be at play here. Care to explain, to debunk some of those issues for us?
Yeah, I mean, again, we see, I think, you know, women 13 times more likely to seek help than men. In terms of suicide, I mean, you get cries for help.
Yeah.
Which is what we would call a Paris suicide, and perhaps, you know, that might be more common in men, in women, whereas men, I guess, are perhaps, you know, we come from a violent society, and I guess when they've made up their mind, they're more likely to perhaps do something like, dare I say it, hang themselves, shoot themselves, rather than, you know, then perhaps take an overdose of certain medication. It's a kind of more desperate situation.
Sure. So I'd like to take your calls on 011-883-0702 as I speak to Dr. Mike Marshall, Executive Manager for Research and Product Development at Afrocentric. Why would you be studying this kind of phenomenon in your work, Dr. Marshall? Why would it be relevant for the work that you guys do at Afrocentric?
Well, you know, we look after medical funds, medical aids, and obviously the rising mental health, as I've indicated you, is a major concern. As I said, you know, we were worried about it, you know, before COVID in 2019. I mean, but in the last couple of years, we've seen a sort of 20% to 30%, you know, increase in mental health claims. And I think, you know, COVID has just exacerbated that. And I think, you know, the problem, if we don't address this, and if we have time, we can talk about some ideas around that, is that, you know, this leads to, you know, leaving it late, to people ending up in hospital, to people not looking after themselves, so other conditions that they might have obviously get worse. You know, our members stop taking their medicines, their diabetes deteriorates. A lot of these people have other conditions. And of course, things like alcohol abuse, substance abuse, and I mean, ultimately, also, I mean, other than the, you know, the health and well-being of the population, you know, there are a lot of members on a medical aid that pay contributions, and that results in a, you know, already expensive contributions going up much more. So this is, you know, this is kind of the new pandemic, and we've got to look at, you know, innovative and smart ways of trying to see how we can address that, and particularly those, Aubrey, that, you know, if we look at those that have registered on a mental health with a mental health condition, you might get 8 or 9% of a medical scheme registering. But when you start looking at the data and looking at the claims pattern, it's probably likely that up to 25% of, you know, our clients, our members have some sort of mental health condition that hasn't really been addressed. And I think that's where we've got to look at through screening and you know, to try and capture those people early before we have all these problems that I described.
Yeah, yeah. I can almost answer the question myself, but I would be answering that question from an anecdotal sort of observation of life. Yeah, I watch how I've seen friends and many more young men committing suicide. I mean, just a month or two ago, we had the passing of Ricky Rick, who's one of South Africa's big musical sensations. And that sort of started a whole new momentum in the conversation around men's mental health. But is it reaching crisis proportions, Doc?
I don't know how one would define crisis, but I mean, I think it's reaching very worrying proportions. I mean, if you look at, I think in 2019, the stats, we had nearly 14,000 suicides in South Africa. And again, I refer to the statistics that we're seeing in the industry, and I think, you know, worldwide, I think, you know, there's a concern around a mental health. So, I mean, I don't quite know how one would define a crisis, but
But if we're saying that South Africans are probably the most stressed out people in the world, I reckon that would be a clue as to how we can get to that. Yeah.
No, I would agree.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
But what does it mean? I mean, we've got serious cases of GBV in this country. I mean, it's really reached proportions that are seriously scary, right? Is the GBV statistic perhaps an indicator of how bad the problem has become in South Africa, just in terms of the stress that men seem to be under psychologically, and how they are able or not able to handle that stress and therefore lash out perhaps at the weaker members of their families?
I missed you there. You said there's so many acronyms in medicine. And
so GBV, gender-based violence.
Sorry.
Yeah.
There's so many acronyms in our industry.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
No, for sure. I think gender-based violence would, you know, certainly, you know, this mental health, if I can call it pandemic, certainly gender-based violence is one of the ways that we would see it playing out, for sure.
Let me take a call from Jay in Johannesburg. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Aubrey. How are you, sir?
Very good, thanks, Jay. Go ahead, man.
Yes, sir. So I think the issue for me is, as men, we do not have the proper tools to articulate what's going on with us on the inside.
Mm.
So we do not have emotional intelligence that is prescribed or, you know, seen. And the problem is the narrative that we've given ourselves in terms of our societal definition of manhood and masculinity.
Mm.
I think with this talk of toxic masculinity, there's been an eroding of necessary masculinity. And not a masculinity that oppresses and abuses, but a masculinity that is, you know, okay with who they are and able to function in society. So when we are met with issues of, you know, having the expectation, because people can say whatever they want to say, but there's an expectation when you are a man of certain things must be done by you as a man. And when you are failing and you are unable and you don't have anywhere to put that emotionally, you now lash out, or you don't, you know, you are in a position where you do not know how to handle it. And I think, you know, instead of erasing masculinity in totality, we should have a way of channeling it and advancing it so that men can be comfortable in.
Oh, I'm losing Jay, but I think I get the essence of what Jay is saying. With all of the conversations that we've had, Doc, around gender-based violence, the tone of that conversation, the pathologization of masculinity, this whole term that says toxic masculinity, the terms under which that conversation comes is already pejorative. It's already judgmental, say some people. And that has created a relationship with men's identity that is, I suppose, problematic. Could Jay be onto something here?
I think he is, Aubrey. And I mean, I think part of, you know, what we need to look at is, I mean, firstly around, you know, educating people. We have, you know, if you look at mental health in this country at the moment, we have 880 odd psychiatrists that are registered, and you know, our claiming pattern shows that about 650 of them actually are seeing private patients. So the solution really is getting into, you know, we can't rely on that kind of tertiary care to solve this type of problem. I think it's really about getting into communities and educating people. And providing them with tools. And I think a lot of the, you know, people talk about self-help and what one can do when one gets into a kind of stressful environment and how one can help themselves. And I don't think there's enough of that out there. But I also think, you know, it's also about acknowledging this, as a previous speaker has said, you know, that there is a hidden crisis out there, and to be able to identify this, you know, within men. And then, you know, to engage. And I think, you know, engagement now, you know, there's new ways of engagement. I mean, other than in the community and you know, one can start also looking, there's, for example, digital, within COVID, you know, the whole digital world has really sort of come alive in the healthcare space. And, you know, there are ways that one could engage online, you know, without the stigma of necessarily having to go and see a psychologist or even a psychiatrist. You know, there's virtual sort of groups that one could join. So I think there are, you know, this whole crisis is opening up new ways of getting access to care. So people don't have to necessarily, you know, sit alone and you know, end up seeing the problems that we see.
Is there a way that we could start having conversations about masculinity that would perhaps lighten the burden on men who feel that their manhood, their masculinity is already pathologized just because they're men? Because there is that feeling from a lot of men who say, look, I'm a man. Didn't choose to be a man. But the very moment the conversation around manhood starts, it already carries the burden of being blamed and judged for certain things that some men do, right? And for that reason, we are uncomfortable with exposing ourselves to mainstream sources of help. And I put that in inverted commas, because already when we as men go to somebody that is supposed to assist us, we're already going there having been found guilty of whatever. How true is that? Or how much should we be putting some sort of attention on that issue, whether it's true or perceived to be so? You know, I've been told, Doc, that my perception of truth is my truth. Might not necessarily be true, objectively speaking, but it is true to me. How do we deal with that? And could that be part of the reason why there's an aversion to going to mainstream places for finding help for men?
Well, I think so. I think we do find it difficult to, you know, those that have gone to mainstream places, you know, I think we do find it difficult to sort of open up and share, you know, what are probably quite, you know, intimate and personal details. And perhaps, you know, in our environment, it is even more difficult. And I guess a lot of this, you know, solutions to this lie in, you know, how we interact with each other as a community, and perhaps also engaging differently. I mean, as I've said, you know, you don't now necessarily have to go and see a mainstream kind of psychologist or psychiatrist. I mean, I think there's a lot of education out there. There's, you know, sort of digital solutions that can help with this, where it's almost anonymous. I think we need to sort of be looking at this a little bit differently than just going through the sort of mainstream access to mental health,
yeah,
which has always been problematic.
Yeah.
And I think those solutions are coming up.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody writes to me and says, good evening, Aubrey. Men should stop putting themselves under unnecessary pressure, like having multiple sexual partners and having multiple children, knowing very well they can't afford to take care of. Multiple sexual partners don't make you a man, says this person. How do you respond, Doc?
I'm not sure how to respond to that, but I mean, I've got to be careful how I respond to the best. I mean, we're talking about stigma of men. I think, again, going back to that conversation,
yeah,
we probably do put ourselves under pressure as well.
011-883-0702. Why are we afraid to go and get help? My suspicion, Doctor, is that part of the fear, and I suppose it continues along the trajectory of the first reason why we do have this aversion, is because of that whole tigers don't cry thing, is perhaps also because we don't know how to say we have a problem. You know, I watch how women in my family, my friends, are able to get into very heartfelt, intimate conversations just at a drop of a hat. They can just start talking. I mean, really, I watch how women will be in a queue going to pay for something, and they'll have like conversations, deep conversations about their children. And you know, we as men seem to have we have difficulty in having conversations that are about our inner world, right? Our heartfelt stuff, if there is no specific question that is being answered, right? How do we approach that? How do we create a question that must be answered? Because I think the big problem here is that unless I can say I have a sore toe, please help me fix it, the whole mental health conversation is very difficult because it's not specific enough. And we haven't developed the language to express it in more specific terms than I'm not feeling right. And then it starts all those dreaded sort of feelings about, yeah, you know, you're a little bit wishy-washy. How can we get a lot more specific, or how can we get more comfortable with what some people might call wishy-washy?
Yeah, do you
understand what I mean, though?
Yeah, I hear what you mean, and you know, that sort of cowboys don't cry type of approach. And I guess, you know, almost as men, because that's what we sort of referring to here. I wonder if it also, you know, how we engage and communicate with each other. You know, and I think I suspect it is changing. I mean, I can't talk to science and that, but I do think, you know, my sense is that men are starting to maybe, you know, feel more comfortable to talk about the soft issues, but we've got a long way to go. And, you know, I suppose in the workplace and, you know, with our family practitioners, when we see them, I mean, I guess it's, how do we create a safe space for that type of difficult a conversation that we kind of not used to? You know, we used to kind of watching rugby and, you know, and that sort of thing.
And eat meat.
I guess it's education. moving away from the stereotypes. Difficult one to answer, Aubrey.
I want to take a quick break, and then I want to invite those listening to us, Doc, to help us. Because I think what happens is that we can't solve the problem until we've identified what it is. And I think that we sometimes gravitate to the easy narratives or the whole thing about tigers don't cry, the patriarchal upbringing, and all of that has validity in this conversation. But I think that because of all of that stuff, we just haven't learned how to articulate, how to voice the stuff that's going on inside of us. And I'm hoping that I can get our listeners to help us give voice to some of the things that we are dealing with as men that we just don't know how to articulate because we just haven't been socialized that way. I'm really looking forward to that conversation as I speak to Dr. Mike Marshall, Executive Manager for Research and Product Development at Afrocentric, when I come back.
Medical Matters.
So why is it that the boys, the manna, the chaps, the fellas, seem to have an aversion to seeking help, particularly as it pertains to mental health and the stresses associated with that? We've broached the issue of the tigers don't cry narrative, the patriarchal sort of upbringing and socialization that we've generally been put through as men. But my sense is that we need a little more specificity in this conversation. And I'm almost of the impression that part of the problem is that we don't know how to. We don't know how to say that such and such a thing is bothering me because that thing is not supposed to bother you as a man. Okay, so that connects to that whole tigers don't cry narrative. But if most guys would feel, and I don't know if you'll corroborate this, Doc, but most guys would feel a little queasy saying, I feel, you know? We've been socialized to say that I have a aneurysm or I have a broken leg and let's sort it out. And the conversation around mental health is about how do you feel? And we've almost been taught not to feel. We've been raised not to feel. In fact, to feel is almost anathema for us as men. And so we haven't developed a language to speak of our feelings. Doc?
Yeah, and I think you're correct. And I also think, you know, the way that the health system deals with it, it's also very sort of problem approach, you know. Why did you come to see me? What's wrong? What's the problem? What's the plan? And let's sort it out. You know, those discussions on feelings are a lot more difficult and time consuming and also possibly not encouraged as much as they should be. I think also from the healthcare system side as well, I think, you know, we also need to look at that and how we sort of extract, you know, those kind of conversations rather than, you know, what's sore today, yeah. How can I fix it?
Give me a call. What would your first visit to a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a pastor, a sangoma be? What would your first words be? I'm talking to the brothers out there, to all the men. What would your words be? And Dr. Marshall, I'm choosing to go through a whole sort of list of possible places that we could go to as men. You know, my imam, my rabbi, my pastor, my sangoma, my psychologist. All of those are probably areas that I could go and ask for help. Maybe the braza, the brothers at the bar. I don't know. But what is the first thing that a man says when I suspect that I've got some real difficulties with how I'm dealing with my inner world, with my psychological world? What do I say?
I think in reality, you know, a lot of these, you know, the first thing that a man says is often plays out in some sort of physical what they would say a sort of psychosomatic type of illness, because exactly as you've said, you know, we don't have the words to express. I feel like this. It normally manifests in as some sort of illness, and it almost hides the, you know, the underlying issue. And I guess we need to find ways to break that barrier and have that discussion on, you know, what is actually, you know, what is actually the problem? What is it that you actually feel? And have discussions around people's circumstances. These are not easy discussions to have. I used to be in practice a number of years ago before I got into this industry and in general practice. And it you know, to tease, you know, these things out is tough. And it takes, you know, a lot of patience and a very good practitioner person to do that. And I guess we need to recognize that.
The Keledi Wahamalebia on Twitter says, watching Rabbi and eating meat. Batong, she says, you really love your meat. Yeah, I enjoy stuck flesh. Not good on the gout, though, but I do. Yeah. I got to watch myself these days. But yeah, I suppose the point I'm trying to make is that we tend to only give voice to what's going on inside of us when we are doing something. We've got to be doing something in order for us to be able to have that conversation rather than come out and just have that conversation. I want to take a couple of calls as they've been coming through, Doc, and I've asked our listeners to help us. How do we voice some of the difficulties that we're experiencing inside of us? Martin Colburn says, Orbs, what is this emotional intelligence that men are supposed to have? Is it the ability to control your emotions, the ability to express your emotions, or the ability to understand your emotions? You're blackmailed to feel less than without it. What is it, says Martin Coleman? And I think that is the nub of the question here, that most men are asking when it comes to the issue of mental illness and the ability to go and seek out the help. And maybe Dr. Marshall will help us out. But let me take some calls. Mike in Rembrandt Park. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Ober. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Mike. What's on your mind?
I really need an explanation as to what is this mental health issue, because sometimes I might not sleep at night, busy thinking about the challenges I'm going through in my life, in my business, in my relationships and all that. But sometimes I read a lot, and then some of the motivational books, they will tell you life is a challenge. You have to always be ready to take the negative forces and the positive forces. So I don't know whether I'm trying to make myself strong, or I need help, or I must accept it as it comes as part of the journey, because life was never meant to be. No one said it was supposed to be, isn't it?
And Mike, I think you're hitting the nail on the head here to say, how do I know when I have a problem versus this is just the normal realities of life that I must just grin and bear. So I hear you. And I'm hoping that the doctor will be able to help us out with that. But I think that once you get to a place of dysfunction, Mike, once you get to a place where you can't function because of...
Can I just get
sure.
this? I'm sorry.
Yep.
I can still function 100%, but I have one problem now.
Yep.
Is that I have like a very serious financial issues. I just bought the car, second hand. It breaks down, and every day they are extracting money, and it doesn't make me sleep because I bought it for business.
Well, the fact that you can't sleep shows that there is a malfunction, Mike. You see, I think that maybe part of the problem is that we think that not being able to sleep is part of the normal reality of dealing with a crisis like you're dealing with. Well, the inability to sleep is a serious malfunction. There's a serious problem there, because it means that it can escalate to other things. Not getting enough rest, not being able to see perspective, because you're under so much stress, is dealing with your functionality. And I'm arguing that maybe there is where your dysfunction is taking place. But I want to hear what the doctor has to say. Doc?
Yeah, I think I mean, there's always that debate around what is sort of, you know, normal stresses in life that we all have to deal with and manage versus when it becomes, you know, problematic. And I think there are some key signs around that. And one of them, I think, is sleep, as you've mentioned. Other is, for example, substance abuse, you know, alcohol, drinking. I think when you start neglecting yourself in terms of, you know, your exercise, I mean, if you're on medicines and things like that, if you don't take those, I mean, suicidal is, you know, if you start feeling suicidal, that's, you know, you're quite far down the line there. So I think it's always better to talk to someone early. So your primary care practitioner, your doctor, maybe someone in your family, or in your community to kind of benchmark it and see where you are.
Yeah.
Because it is a fine line between, you know, normal stresses that we have and when it actually becomes pathological, and you really don't want to get there. And you know, you want to start finding ways to help yourself initially.
Yeah. I remember with myself when I was going through a couple of things, at first you think, oh, you know, a little pill or something will help me sleep. And then you find that that little pill is not helping you sleep. So you take two. Then you take two pills and a drink. And you're not sleeping. Now you're in trouble. Because, you know. So I think those are the kinds of things that we need to see as signals for ourselves as men to say, you know, once you need to take something external in order to give your mind a bit of a rest, like alcohol or drugs, then you are very, very much down a slippery road. And the question for me, Doc, is how do I go to a practitioner, a mental health practitioner? What do I say? What do I say to them when I'm feeling that? See, what do I say? Doc, I'm taking pills. Well, you're not supposed to be taking pills. Hua! You know? So I'm interested to find out from you, what do I say? Lebo is in Sandton. Hi, Lebo.
Hi, bro. I think also part of the problem is the framing of what mental health looks like.
Yeah.
Because there's two aspects. One, when you suffer from trauma, it's like breaking a leg.
Sure.
And you have to go through rehab.
Yeah.
Two is your brain is a muscle. It needs exercise. So helping with processing thoughts, whether something is as a result of your action or whether it's circumstances behind you. For example, suffer from anxiety, and it's as a result of trauma that I had as a child, but it plays out through my job and how I approach certain tasks. And what's helped in that is unpacking some of those traumas and why I have a flight or fight reaction with certain things. And so as people, one of the things we need to start doing is to actually frame what mental health is.
Yeah.
It's when you have difficult decisions to make, it's like going to the gym and saying, you know what, I have this difficult decision, I have to work through it.
Yeah.
You talk to your therapist, you talk to it through with your friends and the like. And, you know, you'll find that some traumas are so deep you need even antidepressants to assist you just to have just that little bit of spark in the day. And because we don't talk about that kind of stuff and we don't frame it as the same way as we talk about physical exercise.
Yes.
We put a stigma to it as if you are crazy. And,
right.
And that is very dismissive.
Or weak.
Or weak.
Yeah.
And that is very dismissive, which can really lead people down a path in which they don't feel heard or seen. And so one of the things I realized as someone who goes through their own mental health challenges but has friends around me are starting to open up about it, that I need to talk more about it because it's more prevalent than we realize. And I think as men, those of us that have received help need to also open up about it because it's not easy. And it, you know, I've seen enough people that kill themselves because they don't feel heard or seen.
Yep. Lebo, thanks, man. Great call. Much appreciated. Brafil in Pretoria, hi.
Hi, Opri, and how are you? And to my learned friend.
Ahead, Brafil.
You know, mental health issues in men, They are less frequently in men and are more crisis orientated. In other words, men get depressed over specific problems such as business setback or illnesses, But in women, you know, these things are more recurring fact of life. The majority of adult females seems to experience despair, disencouragement, disinterest, distress, despondency, disenchantment with circumstances. And normally, when they go to a doctor, they call these conditions the D's. The counselor will say, "I have the D's today, the particular D's." It's responding to a particular incident, but it's recurring in women than in men. No wonder how we get socialized as children, as girls and boys. Girls tend to have more maturity, and boys achieve their maturity later in life. And that is what I wanted to come up with.
Prafil, thank you so much for that call. As we close, Doc, you've heard some of the comments from our listeners. How do we encourage each other as men to seek out assistance, help, especially of the psychological kind?
Yeah, I think, it's again back to, to educating, to, how we engage with each other in the community, how we engage with our primary care providers or, pastors, whoever we seek. I think we need to, acknowledge that there's a sort of hidden crisis of mental health, within the country. And I think we also have a responsibility to perhaps educate ourselves. I mean, there's a lot of information out there that one can get exposure to. We need to find a way, to speak up.
Yeah.
I do think we need to, just from the last caller, we need to also be careful to separate, we all have, a crisis, a car accident, a problem at home. We need to separate that and how you deal with that, from something like a severe depression and mental health illness, which is a completely different
I've got to stop. Yeah. I've got to stop because we've run out of time. But how do people get in touch with you if they need to do so?
Well, I work at AfroCentric, and I think we can give the information.